OK. Let me review. We're not going to talk about that right now. Let me just go back to where we started. OK, we're trying to talk here. What I want you to understand is the culture we're trying to build here. And when I say it's a missional culture, where the passion of a worldwide missions organization, a professional culture, and now we're going to talk about a relational culture, the caring atmosphere of a church family. Here's the problem. Some organizations are professional, but there's no relational context. Others are very family-oriented and relational, and there's no professionalism. And how do you make those two happen? That is the task. That is, it's really impossible, but it's what we're trying to do. And we may tilt from time to time, one way or the other, based on who's leading at the moment in the department. And maybe in some, you know, maybe at QC, they might be more of a relational kind of culture. And maybe at Harrison, what do we call that church now? Malate Church. We still called it TAP until last year. Maybe that's more missional. But overall, we're trying to embrace all of these. Okay, so I want to talk about relational, building a caring atmosphere of a church family where people actually matter. Because ultimately, Jesus died for people, not organizations, not buildings, not vision statements, not organizational charts. All of that exists to serve God's purpose for the people He died for. This is about people. Okay? People matter. And so when you're trying to build a caring atmosphere of a church family, I don't know what kind of families you guys all grew up in. It's probably everybody's got a completely different context. But the way to create that atmosphere, there are a lot of things we have to do to create it. We were Skyping the other day, and it's difficult to get my whole family on Skype, okay? But we did. We accomplished it the other day because William's in Europe. My sons are in Nashville. We're here. Three continents. But we had about 20 minutes of laughing until we were all crying, Skyping together and watching my brothers verbally abuse, I mean, my sons verbally abuse each other. And it was building that and maintaining that family atmosphere. We laughed, we talked, we made some plans of when we're all going to be together next, and it was great. There are things you have to do to keep the right atmosphere. If not, everything just spins out into their own world. It takes intentional effort to pull things back. In my own family, it takes that. The larger, the older we get, the more we go on. And in this spiritual family, it takes intentional effort to pull this relational side. And some of you are relational people, some of you are not. Okay, on Strength Finders, one of mine was relator. You know what relator means? It means that you have three or four friends and you really don't care to add to that circle. And that's who I am, okay? My friends are my wife, my sons, and a few other people. Beyond that, don't bother me. I know that really makes you feel good. Anybody else a relator here? Okay, great. I get it. You get it, don't you? But to do what I'm called to do, I have to break out of that box and artificially create a little bit of woo occasionally, and it drains me, it kills me. Whereas Gans leaks woo, and it's energizing. Wooing is energizing to him. It drains the life out of me. But I have to go woo, you know? I gotta woo people sometimes. And then I go, oh gosh, that is just... Ugh. I get away from these people I wooed so I can revitalize my soul. Some people... So anyway, whatever end of the spectrum you're on, you got to break out of whoever you are because people matter. They may not matter to you, but they matter to God, okay? If you're a relator, they don't matter to you, but they matter to God. And because they matter to God, we have to pretend like we care. That didn't come out right. We have to take His heart. All right, this is horrible. Being way too honest now. All right, three key words. in creating this relational culture. Three key words: love, serve, forgive. Let's talk about love. We just had Valentine's Day, so we all know what love means. John 15, 13, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Now listen, some of you have the capacity for many friends. Some of you don't. It's okay. Just be who you are. Some people, everybody they meet is their new best friend. Other people have had the same best friends for your whole life. Don't compare yourself to someone else, but there is an aspect of friendship. You need friends. That's a biblical concept. Jesus told his discipleship group, you're my friends. And he talked about that he'll tell his friends what he's doing. And not that everybody you disciple becomes a good friend. Some do, some don't. But friendships matter. And there are biblical principles about friendship. You can read them all through Proverbs or just Google, or not Google. Look up the word friend in your Bible, okay? With these verses we have here, Colossians 3:12. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. And when you start dealing with people in your place of work to create the right atmosphere here, listen, you've got to realize you may not like that person. They may drive you crazy. They may make your work a nightmare. But as far as God's concerned, they're chosen and dearly loved. They may be a thorn in your flesh, but God loves them. I don't know why or how, but He does. And if you'll just constantly remind yourself, this person I'm dealing with is someone God dearly loves. Does that change the way you treat them? About a 50-50 for me, but it should change the way we treat them. So, dearly beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. I like that. It's clothe yourself, because it doesn't have to be internal. Just pretend. Just at least on the external be kind. Even if inside you're just ready to strangle them, okay? I think clothe yourself, all right? I may not be what the literal Greek means, but all right. Then it says this, verse 13. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Verse 14, and over all these virtues, all of those are virtues, forgiving, being patient, gentle, kind, compassionate, all those virtues. And then it says in 14, over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. I don't know how you do that, put on love, but I have to. It may not be a lovely person, but I have to put on some love. And I have to treat him like somebody God really cares about. Even if everything in me wants to slap them or let the air out of their tires or, you know, put salt instead of sugar in their coffee or whatever I want to just, I need to put on love and clothe myself with kindness and patience and all this stuff. Okay, that is draining to do that, but we have to, okay? All right, I know some of you it's natural, but some of us it's not. So love, that's the starting point. And love is not a feeling you read on a greeting card. John 15, 13, love is sacrificial, laying your life down. That's what love is. Second word is serve. Paul constantly referred to himself as a servant first and an apostle or teacher or preacher second. At the core of his ministry was a servant. And if that was Paul, how much more should that be all of us? And that I don't think Paul was reminding himself as much as everyone else when he kept on saying that, because it was deep in his heart. And I think that's got to be at the core of this. If we want the right relational culture, then we're here to serve each other. It's easy to serve our boss, the one who decides whether or not we get a bonus. The question is not, can you serve those above you? It's, can you serve your peers? And can you serve people who are perceived to be somewhere beneath you on the organizational chart? It's not even serving when it's your boss. It's just the job. So we can fool ourselves into thinking we're really servants. The real test of serving, Jesus said, can you do it to the least of them? The real test is, how do you serve your peers? People who don't have the authority to demand that you do something. Are you willing to serve them? That is whether or not we have a servant's heart. Are you willing to serve those that you could boss around? That's the real question. It is not serving when it is a command from your boss or when it's part of your job from above. Serving only kicks in the true servant spirit when it's a voluntary thing and you see a need and you're willing to go help a peer or someone else, okay? Does that make sense? And if we want to build the right kind of culture here, it's not departments competing with one another and guarding their turf, but it's having a servant spirit. And it's not saying, okay, this is ours, our little thing. No, this is ours. And what we're doing is for the benefit of everyone and not departmentalizing and not narrowing. And, you know, it's been, it's kind of like in times of growth and prosperity and specialization, it can be like when Abraham and Lot, when they were prosperous, when they were in war and when they were barely had enough food to eat, unity is natural because you need one another. But what happened, where is it, Genesis 14, 15, around there, when they prospered, they started quarreling and they couldn't get along and they ended up separating because of the abundance and the prosperity. And then it became, no, this is mine, that's not yours. But when they wasn't enough, they all knew they had to share and they had to work together and they were forced to. But with growth and specialization and the blessing, it can become, this is mine. And don't bother me, I'm going to do my... That's why we have to constantly come out of the little part into the whole and make sure the dots connect, and then we can freely share resources and ideas, and we can work together and not compete, but cooperate and function that way. But it requires a servant's heart. It requires love, it requires serving. And then the last thought I want to talk about is forgiving. This is, again, I think this takes a miracle, because I think left to ourselves, we all tend towards self-pity, self-absorption, being victims. I mean, the culture more and more celebrates victims, and everybody can figure out how they're a victim of something. Just go watch Oprah, and it just empowers the victims, and it's a victim world. But you know what? Forgiveness ends the victim stuff. That's what forgiving is, and that's why we don't like to do it, because we enjoy being victims. We enjoy having excuses, and we enjoy having that, you know, that whatever that is, that demon, I guess. Back to the first session. But we have to forgive. And anybody who's made it long-term here, you lifers, you guys have been around 10 years and more, who are you? You have probably long since forgotten the list of all the people you've had to forgive. I'm probably first on the list. You've probably got a whole list of all things you've forgiven me of. Because the ones who didn't aren't here anymore. They quit. They're working somewhere else. So I'm sure you guys who are still here have forgiven me. You've forgiven Joey. You've forgiven Manny. You've forgiven all of us. And I'm sure, you know, Paul's only been here a month, and I'm sure he's accumulating that list. That's just the way life is. Okay? How many of you are married? All right. Anybody had to forgive your husband or wife 100 times or more? Anybody? 100 times or more this month? Okay, this month. All right, 100 times or more. Good. I'm glad you did. What did you do with the other 200? Did you just not forgive? It's just life. It's just the way things are. And here's the reality. The closer you are to someone, the more you have to forgive them. The more time you spend with someone, the more you have to forgive them. And so it probably means you'll have to forgive your people you work in the same department with more than you'll have to forgive those whose departments you never encounter. It's just the way life is. If you spend time with your boss, you probably have to forgive that boss more than you have to forgive everybody else, because you're more, you know what? Because we're all fallen, fallible, selfish, obnoxious people at the core, redeemed by Christ. And so we choose to walk through life either forgiving and asking for forgiveness, or we go through life bitter and victimized. I just don't want to live that way. I want to forgive and I want to ask for forgiveness when I'm wrong. So guys, this is as spiritual as it gets right here. If we want to build the right culture, then we have to be forgiving people. And we have to be humble enough to admit when we're wrong and ask for forgiveness. If we don't do those things, we will not build the right kind of culture. We can be professional and we can be missional, but if nobody here is talking to each other and everybody takes everything personally and everybody's holding grudges, and because I don't like what Otto's department did to me, and I'm not going to help him next time. And we don't want that. More than anything, God doesn't want that. And so we can do everything else right, but if we don't get it right relationally, because folks, no matter what your job specifically is, ultimately we are in the people business. This is all about people. Jesus died for people, and it starts with how we treat one another and how we relate to one another, and that is the core of that is forgiving and asking for forgiveness. It's making a marriage work is impossible but not complicated. Just forgive constantly, over and over and over, and don't hold people's stuff against them. And then when you're the bad end of that, just humble yourself and say, I was wrong, please forgive me. That's how it works with God. The reason a relationship with God works is because He forgives. He doesn't hold it against us. And He at least expects us to treat one another that way. The way He's forgiven so much to us, we've got to extend that to each other. And so I'm talking about the kind of atmosphere we want here. It's not perfection. You will have opportunities today to forgive people. The question is, will you take that opportunity? Or will you pocket that offense and let it build? And it builds and builds and builds, and then it's just miserable working here, and it's miserable working with you, because you've got this pile of stuff in every pocket, and it's just, you just got to empty them. Okay? This is real exciting ending, isn't it? My closest friends, okay, let's, obviously, Deborah's probably had to forgive me more than anybody else. Next would be my sons, because they spend more time with me. So the opportunity for offense is a lot higher there. I mentioned my dad. Some of you have heard a little bit about my dad. He visited here a couple of times over the years, I think 2 or 3 times. He passed away a few years ago, about 10 years ago. But my dad... My dad was a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. He was the world's greatest Little League baseball coach, and all the things that I ever did, he was always there. His life revolved around his kids. But he had a drinking problem. He was an alcoholic. 5 o'clock would hit, he started drinking. And so he was wonderful, super dad by day, but as soon as he started drinking, I don't ever remember a day my whole life when he wasn't drunk. Not one day ever. Never. And so we all handled it differently. I just avoided him. My brother was confrontative, so it was ugly. My older brother, my younger sister was the same. But I just checked out, 5 o'clock hit, dad start drinking, avoid. I spent my whole life forgiving him every day. It wasn't a one-time thing. And when I had children, and when they got old enough to see this, I couldn't have my children around him. When we would visit, I would go, but as soon as 5 o'clock would hit, we would leave. I spent a lot of money staying in hotels instead, as my parents had a large home, just the two of them living in it with a lot of bedrooms, but I couldn't stay there. Could not subject my children to what I grew up with. I'm telling you this to say, I have spent a lifetime forgiving my dad, and never once my whole life did he ever apologize. Never. My dad was a tough West Texan, self-made, has never done anything wrong in his life that he should apologize for. He's never apologized to anybody his whole life. But my forgiveness isn't dependent on an apology. I still had to forgive him or I would have destroyed my own soul. And it took my whole lifetime. I was able to lead him to the Lord. So most of you have heard the story, the miraculous encounter. 3 months before he died, he had pulled out of his body a visitation in heaven. My dad, the agnostic who didn't believe any of this, dies, flatlines in the hospital, dies, meets Jesus. Jesus says, I'll give you one more chance. He comes back in his body. The doctors think they revived him, and he's totally transformed, dies 3 months later. But he meets Jesus. Totally transformed. So I thank God for that. I don't know if I hadn't have spent a whole lifetime forgiving him, if I would have ever been able to pray with him and share the gospel in all the times I did, because I had to keep my heart clean. So I say that to tell you, look, we all have to live forgiveness. And so the option is either, okay, I've got some issues here with people at work. Maybe it's a peer, maybe it's a boss, maybe it's my pastor. I don't know. I don't know where it is. I'm sure everybody here has stuff. So here's the deal. You can either quit, or you can be miserable, or you can forgive. Three options. Either quit and go somewhere else and then get bitter at someone there, because it's going to happen again. Or just live a bitter, rotten life, or forgive. Even if they didn't apologize, forgive. Even if their apology was really an accusation. You ever had somebody apologize and they really accused you? By the time they got through apologizing, it was obvious they were expecting an apology from you. Anybody ever had that? I know professionals at doing that. You think they're apologizing. By the time it's over, you're going, oh, man, I'm really sorry. And then you go, wait a minute. Whoa, what was that? How did that happen? It was the okey-doke. It all got switched. But nevertheless, we have to forgive. And our forgiveness is not dependent on an apology. It's not dependent on change. It's not dependent on a sincere, real apology. Because our forgiveness to someone is about our relationship with God. It's not about them. It's about me having my heart right with God. I can't let bitterness and unforgiveness get in there. He has forgiven me so much. Things I've never apologized to Him about because I can't even remember all the things. And He's forgiven me anyway. Then that's how I'm supposed to live. Is that hard? Is that difficult? Wow, it is. But I love what it produces in the kind of atmosphere we can have. I don't want to get too personal with other people here, but I could go through stories of how Joey and I have had to sit, my closest friends, where I've had to sit down and work through apology and forgiveness with Joey, with June, with Ferdy, with Rice, I'm still working with people today because they forgave me and because I forgave them. And again, one of those things I'm proud, I hope it's not a sinful pride, sometimes I don't know, I hope it's not, but I think it's a good pride. I'm proud that in 26 years this ministry's never had a split. I don't know, I was talking to a guy yesterday, one of our campus staff, who started with JIL, and then his part of JIL broke off into Jesus Reigns, and then that broke off into something else. And that's just the story of churches in this city. There may be others, but just about everyone I know of, it's just a series of split, 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 split. And it gets back to what I'm talking about right now. And I so appreciate the people that I've walked with here for 20 plus years, some 10 plus, 15, however long. If you're new, don't feel bad that you weren't in the 20-year, thing. But wherever it was, I'm thankful that everybody's been willing to forgive each other and move on and believe the best. And I'm asking all of you to keep that culture going. Keep that spirit in this thing. None of us have a right to hold anything against anybody if God's really forgiven us. And that's the heart of having a relational culture here, is that we forgive and we give people another chance and we believe the best. We don't take it personally. We don't get personal. But we keep it all out there forgiven, okay? All right, I think that's where we're going to end. And let's do this. You know what? I came up with questions for the last session and didn't use them, and now I don't have them for this one, and we have time. So why don't you take a minute, and Paul, you're the king of questions. Any questions on forgiveness? How personal do we get here?
Real personal.
All right. I had a moment. Again, some of you know, one of my dear friends, Paul Chase, is the pastor of a huge church in Alabang. And I know him because our kids are friends. And Paul had a guy that he didn't know came and preached, famous American preacher, John Bevere, okay? And John's wife will be speaking, one of the main speakers at our conference this July in Orlando, our North American conference, Lisa Bevere. But John's a great guy. But boy, this was a big mistake. Here's what happened. He preached this message. I've never read any of his books, but he's really a great guy. And amazing books, but I've just not read any of them. And I'm sure they're good because they sell a lot. But there was one of his books called The Bait of Satan. Okay? It's a big bestseller. And it's about how the bait, you know, when you're fishing, the bait you bite, but really it's bitterness and unforgiveness. And the book is about that, apparently. And he was preaching that at Paul's church. Okay? And Paul's wife is named Shoddy, which is a real interesting name for a Word of Faith preacher. Okay, because shoddy in English means like lousy or you know, but anyway, her name, so Paul and Shoddy, and so here they are, they have this guy speaking, and he's preaching about unforgiveness and bitterness and the bait of Satan, and it was a powerful sermon, Paul said. And then he goes, now here's how we're going to act on the Word, be doers of the Word. He said, right now, he said, I want you to think of that person who's offended you. You got it? You got it? Yes, yeah, okay. And he goes, I want you to release it. Release the bitterness and release it. And here's how you release it. I want you to stand up and shout their name out. And so Paul is sitting there going, what? And then somebody right behind him, he and his wife are sitting there, somebody right behind him stands up and starts shouting, Sister Shoddy, Sister Shoddy. That's Paul's wife's name. And then other people started shouting his name. It was just... it almost split the church. And then somebody's shouting the worship leader's name, and he's shouting the, you know, kids pastor's name, and this one, everybody's, and they're all looking, what? You talking to me? What? It was a great sermon, but a real dumb application. The honorarium was getting smaller the longer this went on. He's texting notes to the accountant, take a zero off. It was bizarre. It was just the craziest thing I'd ever heard of. So, to see that didn't work. I want to see if that works here. So, would you just stand up right now, and whoever's offended you the most, I just want you. Okay, Ado, who is it? Who has offended you the most in this room? No. So I say that to say I don't know how to talk about this right now, but you figure it out, okay? Just share something that God's speaking to you about this whole thing about forgiveness, okay? But we don't want to create more offense in the way we do this, all right?
I would like to say Paul Barker, but he's not.
Well, that's okay. He's back there. He won't hear it as long as it's not one of these two, okay? All right. Why don't you just share something God's speaking to you, okay? Something that is hitting you. What is the biggest struggle with forgiving? What is the toughest thing you've had to forgive? I don't mean your parents or your spouse. At work, what is the most common thing you have to forgive? Not the most common person, the most common thing that comes in there and you know you have to forgive people for this. What is the thing that hits you that you have to live out about forgiveness? What's the most difficult? What's the most common? And what are things that people need to forgive you for? Think about that, okay? Talk.
That's getting us angry. Good.
Hey, and make sure you're not within striking distance.
In the meeting. parang for them, hindi, ito na naman talaga yung difference. Sabi ko sa kanya, you begin to understand. Sometimes, without ever mentioning, although there are some talaga kailangan ko, I heard about me, may times talaga ng I need it. Now, but there are times talaga, oh, wala lang ka talaga. So that's something, no? Why not you give those things? I have really forgiven I think one of the things that I have just put just personality difference.
Three more minutes.
So I think that's what more in
Ninety seconds. Last 10 seconds. Okay. Shh. All right. Who has not spoken today? Let's talk about forgiveness. What is the most quick, give me just a quick one or two or three word answer. What is the most common thing that you have to forgive from a work perspective? Three words at most.
The need to be right. For me,
you have to forgive that in others. The need to be right.
When they accuse me that I did something wrong, or but I didn't.
So. Okay, wrong answer.
No. I'm having a hard time right now.
I'm just testing, just giving you an opportunity. Okay, who else? Otto, quick answer.
When they didn't want to hear my opinion.
Okay, right.
When people ask me something of the same, what's pakiusap in English? Same favor of the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Me too. One more time.
When there are expectations and people don't deliver.
I have to. When they do not do the stuff that they're supposed to do on time.
When
hold the mic for she's scared of me. No.
When people put the mic in my face.
When the 95 things that you delivered, and then there's this one mistake.
And then they get on you for that. Ah, okay. Yeah, okay.
Okay, Pastor Steve, I'm very new in the job, so there's no issue of forgiveness for me yet.
Wow, wait till tomorrow.
Unmet expectations.
Okay.
Due to personality differences, some things they say come across differently on my end.
Okay.
The same, unmet expectation. It's not delivering.
Okay, everybody listen to this. What have you had to forgive Pastor Dennis for the most?
I love him with all my heart.
We know that's not true. Come on, tell us what is the most common thing you forgive Dennis for?
He hasn't offended me much so far, but this week was really rough for me.
All right. What are the top 10 things you had to forgive Pastor Joey for? We better not go there. All right. Anybody else? Anybody anything to add to this? Okay. Is there a mic back there? Right there. Jerry, pass that mic back.
When someone from among the staff just violated the very policy or system that you put in place, and then they did not inform you about it, so it was really...
Yeah. Right, what's the most common policy that's violated that you need to forgive people for?
An equipment that is being pulled out without the gate pass and my permission.
I can feel the pain.
Yeah.
I can feel it. It's coming.
Does anybody else get mad about that? Anybody else? Edwin, what's the most common thing you have to forgive your boss for? We won't say who your boss is, but what's the most common?
No, not to my boss. Basically for me, inefficiency.
Inefficiency,
yeah.
Okay.
The people I work with.
Yeah. Janelle, have you ever had to forgive Robert for anything?
A lot.
Hey, cone of silence here. Okay, not Robert. Your anonymous boss.
When there are seemingly impossible tasks asked of me.
He like, just believes in you.
Yeah, so... Yeah. And, inefficiency also.
How many of you get impossible tasks asked of you on a regular basis? All right, that's just... Welcome to every nation. Welcome to victory. That's why I said that again. This is supernatural. That requires a miracle what we're doing. But it, you know, there's a part of me that loves that and a part of me hates it. I would hate the mundane boredom of just doing stuff that, you know, you can do. But the challenge of that can't be done, but I have to do it or I lose my job. That. All right, anybody else? Okay, middle table. Middle earth, right here.
What's hard for
your
me?
Former boss, before you went to HR, what is the thing that you had to forgive the most that finally drove you away to a different department? We'll remain anonymous who you're talking about.
So long ago, I don't even want to remember.
Wow, it's amazing. You said it was such a long list you can't remember?
No, I was telling them, I think the struggle, the situation is, gosh, there's most probably a long list people have a difficult time forgiving me for. And one...
Thank you, Edwin.
The one thing, it's really a source of irritant for me, and I'm learning how to handle it, is when it isn't, not inefficiency period, but continued inefficiency. It's like... it's hard. It's really just hard.
So you get really irritated when people aren't as smart as you? Is that what it is? You have to forgive people of lesser intelligence. Which is, you better get used to it. All right. Hi. Who's that?
Okay.
Jing?
Oh.
We'll do confessions later.
With the job that I do, it's sometimes that when they use their position to get what they want, or sometimes they go directly to Pastor Gilbert and said that there's a clearance for what they need to buy or what they need to. It's like they justify why there's a need to get it. So, yeah.
That's unforgivable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Krish.
That's not me. She's talking about that.
She was pointing to you.
She's just touching me. Just to make it clear. Now, it's kind of hard to drop off lousy and tactless comments, especially when people are not sensitive. that you're already tired, you rush through a deadline, and then they just drop a tactless comment. It's hard to just drop it and not even make it an issue after. Just to look back and say, it's okay, never mind.
I'm going to talk to Pastor Gilbert about that today.
But it's at Pastor Gilbert also.
All right. Here's what I want to do. I want to pray for a moment. We have 3 minutes and 20 seconds left. Okay. I want to pray, and I'm sure every one of us here could think of a list of things. And I appreciate what Pinky said. And I think that's a good thing. That's so far in the past. But you know what? There are things that are in the past. If we haven't forgiven, they're not in the past anymore. We have a rope, and we just pull them into the present all the time. And then we pull them into current situations. That's what unforgiveness does. When we've really forgiven, then it really is in the past. And we would have to really take a moment and remember. That's what forgiveness does. It cuts those strings. And so right now, let's just pray. Just bow your heads. And I said from the beginning, what we're doing is spiritual. It's not just a job. It's spiritual. And Lord, this is a spiritual moment here. And I just pray that you would go deep in our hearts. And if there's any area of unforgiveness, anything we're carrying from the past that affects the way we do our job now, Lord, I pray by your grace and your mercy, it would be uprooted. Would you just lift your hands to him right now? And I'm just going to assume all of us need to forgive at some level. Maybe you've already done it, but Lord, we just say this. Lord, I forgive. Lord, I let it go. If you've forgiven me, then I have no right to hold it against someone else. Lord, I pray you'd heal our hearts. And if we need to go and ask forgiveness, I pray you'd show us. And Lord, we want to humble ourselves before you. Thank you for your mercy. Thank you for your grace. In Jesus' name, amen. Now stand up and shout their name out.
Awesome. That was a great day, wasn't it? Okay, now remember, there's no homework. But if every day, you just take 10 minutes and go over your notes and remember what God said to you, it'll make a huge difference of really getting it down in your heart and not just being a really nice set of well-designed notes sitting on your shelf. Just 10 minutes. Matter of fact, today, the sooner you reinforce what you've heard by reminding yourself, the more likely it will go from your short-term memory into that long-term memory where it'll be a part of you for life. It's exactly 12 o'clock. Go home.